Cap, Jay Hood.
Our new morning show.
Follow on Instagram at Cap Jay Hood.
This is ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Watch this show on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN1000 Chicago with Hoodie. I'm Cap. So I was at this station and then left for 20 years and then came back. The first time I was here, one of my most famous interviews I did was with Rick Pitino. How did I get Rick Pitino to come on the show?
How?
His assistant, Billy Donovan, who I got to know when he was an assistant coach, got Rick to call in on the show. And so a few weeks ago when we learned, oh, my God, he's not going to be back in Oklahoma City, what did you and I start screaming? Arturas, get a Net Jets card, get on that damn play with Mark Eversley, and get to that guy's house. This is a no-brainer. And they sold the Bulls to Billy Donovan. He's our guy now. He's our coach. He's on our show. Billy, congratulations. Can't begin to tell you how exciting it is to have you here in our city.
Well, thanks, Cap. I'm really, really excited, and it's been obviously a whirlwind the last week, but, you know, I met a lot of great people, and the experience was wonderful, so I'm very excited.
Billy, tell us about the process with Arturas Karnauskas and Eversley, because they come in, and it feels fresh for the Chicago Bulls organization. What was it like meeting them and the conversation you had with them?
Well, I think I mentioned this yesterday in the press conference. You know, when things finished up at OKC, my family was back in Florida because right when the coronavirus hit, they were actually leaving to go on spring break. My wife was coming back here to see my daughter with my two youngest children. And then when school got canceled for them, they just kind of stayed there. And I kind of came back and visited them a little bit. And then I went back to Oklahoma because there was obviously a lot of talk. We were going to go into a bubble, potentially maybe Las Vegas or Orlando. And, you know, we went to the bubble, and then I came back, and I think right after Labor Day weekend, you know, I talked to OKC, and then I ended up driving back from, you know, Oklahoma to Florida. And, you know, I didn't really know. It was obviously a very, very long year with what everybody had to deal with and then going into the bubble. So, you know, I'd gotten a call that, you know, Arturas wanted to meet, and he wanted to do it on Friday. And I was like, listen, I just got back home. I haven't seen my family in like 3.5 months. I said, I like to spend the weekend with them, and they came in on Monday morning at like 9 a.m. And I really didn't know what to think when they came. They didn't really talk to me about anything on the phone other than the fact that they wanted to talk face to face. And you know, when I sat down with them, I didn't know what the future would hold or situations, and you know, I didn't know if I'd maybe be sitting out for a year or what would happen. I knew I was excited to get back to see my family. But the first thing Arturas said to me, you know, which really kind of hit me between the eyes, he just said, listen, you know, what I'm looking for here is I'm looking for a partnership. You know, I'm looking to work with somebody and work together with somebody to help build back up the team and the organization. And, you know, we're really interested in you. And, you know, it started from there. And Arturas and I think, shared a lot of commonalities in terms of, there's some mutual people we know, and I heard nothing but great things about Arturas. I heard nothing but great things about Mark Eversley. And the conversation progressed over about 5.5 hours. And we talked about a variety of different things, you know, from, you know, the team having a blank canvas, starting over, you know, trying to build the program, working with the players that are currently there. I know just being in Oklahoma City for 5 years, they obviously were ravaged with a lot of injuries over the last several years. But it was just, I was just really, really excited because I felt like I could really partner with Arturas, and I thought we'd work very, very well together. And, you know, it progressed into that. And then we had another phone conversation on Wednesday for an extended period of time, just to kind of some follow-up questions. And then on Friday, I was on a call with Michael and Jerry Reinsdorf, and, you know, there's people in this profession, both baseball and basketball, that I know that obviously had nothing but great things to say about Jerry and Michael. And, you know, it just kind of progressed. And it just, you know, at this point in time, you know, I was really, really excited about, you know, working with someone like Arturas, and thought it would be a great partnership, and thought it'd be something that we could really work on together. And, you know, it was just really appreciated, you know, the way he approached the whole situation and the way he handled everything and the things that we talked about. It was very open. It was very honest. It was very transparent. And I think, in any relationship, when you start from that premise, it always is the best way to start, because that's where I think trust gets built.
I remember watching you play in the 1987 Final Four, and I think it was in New Orleans. You're playing for Providence, and thinking, okay, that's a pure point guard, and that is the kind of guy that will eventually become a coach. And then you end up working for Coach Pitino, and then you become a head coach. You work your way up. You win two championships at Florida. You are a very cerebral guy who understands the way the game has evolved, the way the game should be played. And the thing that jumps out at me watching every Bulls game for the last 20 years is we don't have what I call a four-pass point guard, somebody that he sees everybody on the floor. Yes, he could score and make shots in the new game, but he can get the ball in the area to make everybody else better. Is that a priority to try and get this thing turned at the point guard spot?
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that was interesting is we played Chicago in the United Center when Kobe White was kind of on that run of getting over 30 or 35 points for five or six games. And he did the same thing to us as well. He played really, really well in that game. You know, I maybe just got done coaching one of the greatest point guards of all time in Chris Paul. And obviously he's a 15-year veteran, but his IQ, his understanding for the game, his work ethic, the way he studies the game is really remarkable. And I do think in a lot of ways, you know, that's a position, as you mentioned, that's maybe changed a lot, you know, over the years.
Yep.
Where it's not that first, you know, set up point guard. You're seeing guards now, point guards now that can score, which I think is a positive and a good thing. But I do think those point guards evolve and get better as time goes on, because to your point, they need to learn how to incorporate, make the group better, get the ball to guys in spots where they can be effective. And, you know, I think that's part of development and working with guys. But, you know, even, you know, Russell Westbrook, having him for 4 years, you know, as explosive and athletic as he is, he had a very, very good feel for the game, and he understood, you know, where people were and how to try to get people involved. And he tried to always make the game easy for people around him. You know, his style and Chris Paul's style are totally different. But, yeah, I think when you're starting off with a point guard that understands that, it's certainly, you know, impactful and helpful. But I also think it's a process to get to that point, too, and it does take time.
Coach, when you were on the other side coaching against Fred Hoiberg and Jim Boylan, and you'd come in here or they'd come to you when the Bulls would come in, what was your thoughts about the Bulls roster when you had to face them? What was the scouting report you had on the Bulls?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, last year in particular, I mean, I thought their group competed really hard. They played exceptionally well at our place. I mean, they got us down, I think, midway through the third quarter by 26 points. We were a little bit overwhelmed with how aggressive they were defensively. I think this past season, the Bulls may have been either first or second in the league in forcing turnovers. It took us a lot of time, I thought, in that game to kind of get adjusted to their aggressiveness. I also think, too, that, you know, one of the things, you know, certainly I think Fred had to deal with this, and I think Jimmy did as well. You know, they had a lot of injuries to some key players that were out, and they were having to use a lot of different combinations of players. So it's so hard when you're playing 82 games and you have some of your better players that are not out there on a consistent basis, and I think that makes it tough. But, you know, I thought Lowry, Markkanen was, you know, terrific his rookie year. I know he battled some injuries. I think, you know, Kobe White came in and really evolved as a point guard and as a player and went on an incredible tear for a period of time there, which was really a bright spot. You know, Zach LaVine has always been a hard guy to guard because he really doesn't need a lot of help. If you give him space, he's got the ability to put the ball on the floor and create and can kind of get a shot whenever he wants to. And actually, Wendell Carter, you know, I recruited a little bit when he was younger when I was at Florida. He was maybe a freshman or sophomore. He's out of Atlanta. I went in to watch him. And, you know, you hear about his character and his IQ and, you know, what he can do as a player. It was interesting. Somebody, you know, after I accepted a job who knew Wendell, you know, had kind of compared him from an IQ and a character, competitive character standpoint to Al Horford. And I thought that was obviously a great sign because Al was a tremendous player to coach.
So as you look at Chicago, did you watch The Last Dance? And did The Last Dance in your mind at all go, wow, that's what Chicago can be, because you were here recruiting Antoine Walker and whoever else. How much did The Last Dance factor into you wanting to take this challenge?
I don't know if it was necessarily a factor in taking it. I thought it was an incredibly well-done series. You know, it certainly takes you back to the greatness of the Bulls during that era. And the one thing about the organization and the Bulls is, you know, what the Bulls organization has meant to the game of basketball, what it has meant to the world. You know, obviously, it's a worldwide brand. You know, what Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen and that group did and Phil Jackson did, you know, was really, really remarkable. And I think the one thing that stood out to me, you know, in watching it was just the competitiveness of that group and the drive by that group. And I think that, you know, they're going to go down as the greatest teams to ever play this game. And certainly that's almost an impossible standard to live up to. But I think the one standard you can live up to is how hard they competed and played and how they tried to work together as a team. And that was certainly really positive. But, you know, growing up and being around during that era and watching some of that stuff and what they did, it's really a lot more remarkable when you now in 2020 look back on those teams to sit there and say they won it six times. Like, I mean, it's mind-boggling.
Yep.
You know, I don't know if anything like that will ever happen again because of the parity and things like that, but it was really an incredible, you know, journey for them, and what they did, you know, is will probably never be done again.
Coach, Cap and I were talking about how to get players to buy in defensively. We were talking about Lou Dort. You know, it's one thing to follow the basketball when you're watching, but when you take a look in granular detail, watching that kid Dort or watching Robertson, a guy that you coached, that, I mean, it's just amazing how Dort fights through screens, a guy that's not willing to just switch and just to switch. So what is your message to get to players on how they can buy in defensively?
Yeah, I think the one thing with Lou, which was really interesting, I'll never forget this. One of my former assistants at Florida is now an assistant coach at Arizona State, and actually Rashawn Burno, he played at DePaul, so he's from Chicago type.
Yeah.
And when we picked up Lou as a free agent, he called me and told me what an unbelievable defender and what a great kid he was. And I'll never forget this conversation. When we sat down and talked, he was obviously a little bit heartbroken because I think the perception he had was he was either going to go maybe at, you know, somewhere in the first round, second round, and he went undrafted. And I watched him in the summer when we had summer league and, you know, around the players. And the one thing I felt about him is he really, really had an incredible ability to defend. And I thought he was ready to defend in the NBA. Now, he needed to obviously learn the players a little bit more because he didn't have that experience. But in some of my first conversations with him, I just said, listen, the first thing you have to focus on is you are elite defensively and you're not elite offensively yet. And sometimes guys get it backwards. And what they try to do is focus on what they can't do. You just need to be great on defense. Now, you'll get better in terms of making decisions and do those things, but our team needs this. Now, while he was in the G League, we had a rash of some injuries ourselves to Hamidou Diallo and Terrence Ferguson. We were a little bit short, you know, on the perimeter. So we kind of plugged him into a couple games, and he really did a nice job for us. He really, really did a great job. And I give the kid a lot of credit because he had a really – I forget what game it was against Houston in the playoffs, but he really struggled in one game. He was like 3-for-16, and they were leaving him open. And his ability to bounce back – and I give our players a lot of credit because they were encouraging him to take his open shots because we needed the spacing. But – he knew that his job and his role was he had to guard hard, you know, and for us to win, he had to do that. So I think that the defensive side is always an accountability issue that there's people relying and you have to rely on each other. Same thing on offense in terms of ball movement and making the extra pass to the open man. I think you've got to be able to defensively rely on each other. And to your point, we kind of in preparation for Houston and guarding James Harden, we did not want anybody else on him but Dort when he was in the game. Now, I think Chris Paul and Dennis Schroeder, those guys certainly were capable, and when they had their chance at him, did a nice job. But Lou probably was our best defender on him. So when they were kind of running those screens and putting him in situations trying to get Lou off of him, we just wanted to make sure we kept that matchup. And to your point, he did a great job fighting over screens and getting through and getting back on the ball, which was really encouraging.
We're talking to Billy Donovan. He is the new head coach of our Chicago Bulls. Bigger influence on your style of coaching, Rick Pitino or Frank Morris, your high school coach, who was a legend?
Wow, I mean, that's a great question. You know what was really interesting? When I played for Frank Morris in high school, he wanted a shot every 4 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And we probably averaged about 94 points, 95 points a game.
Wow, that's way back 40 years ago.
Yeah, with no three-point line. I mean, it was unbelievable how fast we played. I told somebody this. When I was in high school, all I had to do was advance pass. I probably spent half the game in the backcourt because all I did was throw up the floor and someone shot it. But I learned a lot about spacing and, you know, assigned lanes and how to fast break correctly. And I kind of walked into a situation at Providence when I went there my first 2 years. We were really a slowdown team. We weren't talented enough. We had Otis Thorpe at that time, my freshman year. I didn't play a lot. There was a 45-second shot clock. We tried to keep games close and utilize the shot clock. And then I think, you know, when Coach Pitino came in, it was somewhat similar to Frank Morris. It was somewhat similar to that kind of style where we pressed and we ran and we got up and down the floor and there was a lot of freedom to shoot and play. And, you know, obviously having the opportunity to play for my high school coach and then Coach Pitino, there's no question that those guys had a huge impact in shaping my view of the game. And, you know, even now with all the analytics, the thing that was impressive about Coach Pitino, and he had an NBA background coming from the Knicks when he came to Providence to coach, he understood without analytics how to utilize the three-point line. And he was so far ahead of his time with that, that most of the coaches around the country thought it would ruin the game and they didn't want to take that shot. And he wanted to take 35 of them a game. And you think about it now, like 35 a game, probably at that point in time, no one ever shot that many.
Right.
Now, like 35 a game is like close to the average. So he was very, very, a big part of where the game is at today because I think it's his view on the three-point line.
Coach, you must have felt like you were back in college at times with the Thunder because of how often the roster changed for you. How daunting was that to be able to have so many moving parts? Some teams with Durant and Westbrook, some with Victor and Sabonis, some with Schroeder, some with Alexander. How daunting was that for you to not be able to have something set on a regular basis for the Thunder?
Yeah, I mean, it was challenging. The way I tried to view it, and you made a good point, you know, coming from college, you have guys that transfer, guys that go to the NBA, guys that graduate. So your roster turns over quite a bit. I tried to look at it as a great opportunity to grow, you know, as a coach, because to your point, you're going into the offseason, you've got a whole different set of guys you're playing with. And I was fortunate that all the guys you just mentioned were great guys, great to work with. And they were guys that, you know, I think I tried to put in position to do what they did well. But there's no question. I've always felt like offensively, you know, you can have a philosophical belief on how the game is played and how you want to get there, but you're going to have to do different things as your personnel changes because every player is different. You know, Chris Paul is totally different than Russell Westbrook. You know, Victor Oladipo is totally different than Lou Dort. You know, Carmelo Anthony was totally different than Jeremy Grant. So different guys have different skill sets and talents, and you just try to put those guys in situations. So, you know, what we ran for Kevin Durant my first year and what we ran this year was like totally different because the personnel changes. And I think offensively, you got to try to build out on what your personnel looks like.
Billy, in terms of lifestyle, you're the head coach at first Marshall, then Florida. You get access to great facilities at Florida. You win two national championships. But as a college coach, if one of your players gets in trouble, you get the call 2 in the morning. One of Coach Donovan's guys did that. It's not the biology professor's student. In the pros, you play more games, but it's I go to work, I coach my team, I go home, and I'm with my family. Which lifestyle was better suited to Billy Donovan, the ultimate family man with a wife and 4 kids?
Yeah, I think they're really, really a lot different. And you know what I mean? And I think both of them, Both of them are very, very demanding in terms of the lifestyle. And what I mean by that is, you know, certainly in college, you're not playing, you know, as many games. But you're also, you know, I remember when I first started coaching, I was on the road 180 days on the road recruiting.
Yep.
There was 180 days to recruit, you know. So maybe you're not playing games, you're on the road recruiting, you know. Or there's booster functions around the state of Florida that you got to fly to go speak to people, right? So the season ends. It's not like the season ends in college. You're done. You go right into recruiting, and you're going right into a lot of speaking, you know, to boosters and supporters of the program. And that is very, very time consuming. The NBA, you know, the days are flipped, I've always said. You know, you practice at 3 o'clock in college. In the NBA, you practice at 11 o'clock in the morning. I would say that there's a lot more free time in terms of, in the NBA, really focusing on your team. Because, you know, when practice is over with and guys kind of get out of the facility and it's 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you know, you really have a lot of time to focus on your team. It's more centrally focused than college. You know, college, you could be preparing for practice, and then there's a 3 o'clock practice. You finish practice at 5 o'clock, and you may be in the car driving to Bradenton, Florida, to watch a kid play at 7 o'clock that night. You know, or you may end up being on the phone for a while making recruiting phone calls. So, you know, it's just different. You know, in college, you're doing a lot more stuff around practice as it relates to the overall program, where I think college, most of your time in practice is over with. You know, in the NBA, you're focusing on your team. And, you know, I really have enjoyed the NBA. It's been a great experience. I mean, I love my time in college, but I think as I've gotten older, you know, I love the game, and the amount of focus and it being basketball all day long, all the time, has always been something that I've always, you know, looked at as being intriguing to me with the NBA. And then after experiencing it the last 5 years, I really have enjoyed it.
Coach, how important is free agency for a head coach to be influential in free agency and that process with the GM, with the president of basketball operations?
Well, the one thing in talking to Arturis and Mark, and I really appreciate, because we had a conversation about both things, and I think it's very, very hard in today's day and age in the NBA for a head coach to really, really understand or know the college game. There's so many games in the NBA. You're focusing on your team, and the season ends. You may have a little bit of time to watch some film and talk and try to, you know, gather your thoughts or opinions on a player through film. But generally, you have scouting staffs that are basically going around the country, overseas, watching, gathering information on players. I think they're a lot more equipped than I would be as a head coach in terms of the draft, of understanding the draft. Now, Arturis, when I spoke to him and Mark, the one thing I really appreciated was, you know, they wanted me involved in that process. You know, what does the team look like? What does our team need? You know, what kind of not only player but personality would best fit, you know, with this group? So I think that was, you know, something that I would really love to be able to help and to do. But ultimately, Arturis and Mark Eversley are going to be the ones that, you know, are really doing a lot of the legwork and the groundwork for a long period of time. And, you know, I think they'll bring me into that process. I think the free agency part, and they asked me this specifically, you know, how willing would I be to get on planes or to try to help and, you know, be involved and be active. And I really would love to do that. I want to help the organization any way I can. So however I can be utilized to help with free agency, I would definitely be more than willing to do that. I think trade deadline situations that, you know, they want my opinion because, you know, when you're in the NBA, you're seeing these guys on a more consistent basis than you are college guys. So, you know, they're the ones that are doing all the homework and the background work. But I think that in my discussions with Mark and with Arturis, it was more like, hey, listen, we need some help here. We need to partner with you. We want to, you know, hear what you have to say. We'd like to watch film with you. We want to talk about players. And I really appreciated that. You know, that part of it was really, really great, and look forward to trying to help those guys in any way I can.
Billy, I know that there's not a ton of salary cap flexibility right now. I know we're in a pandemic. We don't know what the cap could be. Do you think you guys can be somewhat active this offseason to upgrade the roster and have a more competitive team and maybe even sneak into the playoffs in year one of your tenure?
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be the interesting part right now. I mean, Arturis and I did not at all get into anything specific about specific players or what the plan is. I think Arturis now being there for a few months, I think the fact that, you know, I was a little bit disappointed that I couldn't be in Chicago inside the bubble with the group. It's just, you know, with the pandemic and having a quarantine, and by the time I got in there, they'd probably be finishing up. So that part is hard. I think Arturis is probably in the gym evaluating and watching guys play, and I think he's a player's kind of a guy that, you know, has wants to get to know the guys, spend time with the guys. I've got to certainly start, you know, here very soon, start to get on the phone with guys just to touch base with them. But I think there'll be some kind of plan, and I'm sure Arturis has worked at that, but we have not really sat down and discussed, here's what we're looking to do with the team at this point in time, and here are the moves or things we're looking to do. We haven't gotten into any of that. I think that's probably a little bit too early, but I would say this, that, you know, Arturis and Mark are going to work extremely hard to continue to build out the team, and continually to try to make it more and more competitive. And hopefully myself as a coach and the staff, you know, we will help, you know, the guys that are in the organization get better and improve and, you know, hopefully more importantly, stay healthy because they've had so many injuries over the last couple of years. But, you know, that will be a big part of it there. But I look forward to those conversations going forward.
Was it safe for you in the relationships that you've made, that you've had all the support? I know that you probably got a million text messages, but on social media, Coach, whether it's Bradley Beal, Joakim Noah, so many others have supported you in this effort with you being the head coach for the Bulls. What does it say for you and the relationships that you've had so much overwhelming support from the NBA community?
No, it's great. I mean, the outpour of just friends and different family members and former players texting, I can't keep up with it. You know, I've obviously been trying to work, you know, remotely with Arturis to connect with everybody, you know, in the Bulls organization. If there's one thing I'd say, I've been so blessed to coach, you know, so many great players. But I think the one thing that fans don't get a chance to see, and, you know, like you mentioned Joakim, and he and I spoke the other day for a while. You talk about a guy that loves Chicago and loves his experience there. And, you know, whenever his career finished up, all he talked about with me was, you know, wanting to get involved in the Bulls charity to try to help the city, the community, and charity work. He's just got an unbelievable heart. You know, Brad Beal, people watch him as a player. I mean, just his character and who he is as a person. He came into college as a pre-med major. You know, he's extremely bright and gifted and just an unbelievable person. You know, even Udonis Haslam, you know, hearing from him and, you know, a guy that, you know, one of my first recruits at Florida. I've just, you know, have had a chance to coach a lot of great players, but I've had a chance to be around even better people. And I think when you have that combination, you're going to be successful. And I'm certainly grateful for all those guys because they mean a great deal to me and, you know, appreciate all their support.
Last thing for me, Billy, and we're so, you know, glad to have you on the show and have you in town. Do you realize what you're getting into? Because this sports city is like none other, man. They are provincial and they want to win, and people are so fired up that you're here.
Yeah, I'm excited. You know, I understand, you know, Chicago's a great city. I've always said this, you know, coming into the NBA. I never, you know, I think maybe one time we played at the United Center when I was at Florida, and, you know, I obviously recruited Chicago, you know, when I was in college, but it's a great city. Everybody raves about the city. I've always enjoyed coming to Chicago, you know, when we played the Bulls. It's obviously an incredible, iconic organization, and, you know, I want to win as well. So, you know, there's a lot of work ahead of us. I'm excited about getting to work with these guys, and hopefully we can continue to grow and build, you know, what's there, and hopefully we'll continue to get better as an organization, as a team.
Well, thank you for your time. We're looking forward to having you on and looking forward to working with you, and congratulations and welcome to Chicago.
Thanks so much, guys. I really appreciate it. It's a pleasure to be on with you.
All the best.
Thanks, Coach.
There he is, Billy Donovan, the new head coach of the Chicago Bulls. Hoodie, we'll take a quick break and react to this. I'm so excited to hear a guy, yeah, I want to get on planes and go recruit guys, and I want to be there. And, yes, we're going to be active, and we're going to try and take this thing to the next. I'm so fired up.
So great. It's good to hear from Coach Donovan. We got to address a lot of things that he said. I'm really excited about the future for the Bulls with him being here.
All right, 312-332-3776. Your thoughts on what you just heard from Billy Donovan. Next.
Cap J. Hood. This is ESPN 1000.
I'm Cap. Your thoughts on what you just heard from new head coach Billy Donovan, 312-332-3776. Hoodie, I am so excited that this guy is here, man.
I'm just, you know, it's just a breath of fresh air. And I don't know why many people looked at the Billy Donovan hire as a negative. Look, you have someone who is as a champion on the college level who has coached very well on the NBA level. He's coached so many superstars during his time in the NBA. It's about time that the Bulls were able to get to the top shelf. We've been bargain basement. We've been getting the bargain basement coaches or those that are learning on the job for years. Why not get the best? When's the last time you heard the Bulls got the best of anything? They got the best guy available, and they got Billy Donovan. I'm very happy about it.
Yeah, hearing him talk about, you know, not taking away from what a guy does well. He compared Russell Westbrook to Chris Paul and said how different it was to coach both of them. Chris has much more of a mid-range game. Russ is going to shoot threes, or he's going to go in and try and dunk over the top of you, or, you know, take it right to the rack. He talked about, you know, the way the game has changed. He grew up in a system in high school where shoot it every 4 seconds. Well, in 1983, when he came, that was like unheard of. And then he goes to play for Pitino, and that's what the game has become today. I think we're in for a lot of fun here, man.
I asked him the question about flexibility because I think that's something very key. As you and I have discussed, when the Bulls are good, we might not even see half this roster. There's got to be cornerstone players that he looks at, like LaVine. He looks at Kobe White, maybe a few others, and say, I can play with these guys. I think these guys can lead us someplace. But once the Bulls are good, Cap, they're going to be able to change some pieces to fit Donovan's system, to kind of get it in his image. Keep in mind, this is the same coach that 1 year had Durant, Westbrook, had Serge Ibaka, had Steven Adams. Next year, all of a sudden, here comes Victor Oladipo leading. Next time, it's Carmelo Anthony. Next time it's Westbrook, it's George, it's Chris Paul. He's had a lot of different moving parts from his time in Oklahoma City. So I like that you have a head coach that can adjust and still get you close to the 50 win mark and try to do some damage in the playoffs. So I love that he's flexible enough to be able to coach whoever's on the roster.
He is a guy that also gives you cachet, Hoodie, and you know, he came in here and he got Antoine Walker to go to Kentucky. And he was being recruited by everybody. And then he starts his head coaching career. He goes to Marshall, to Florida, wins big there, comes to Oklahoma City. And it's not like you're hiring a college coach who has to learn the NBA. He's already done that. He did his apprenticeship in OKC. Now we've got a finished product here.
Absolutely. You've got a guy that knows what he's doing in there. When you see Donovan, you have that confidence as a Bulls fan. You say, here's someone with some experience. And then on top of that, I guess I thought the best part of our conversation was his willingness to get on that plane and be part of the free agent process.
Agreed.
You know, some coaches won't do that, or some GMs will take all the oxygen up in the room and say, hey, I'm the president of the team, he's a general manager, and here's a film, and we'll just show you the film of what used to be. Well, it's really not about what used to be. It's about someone that everyone in the NBA community knows and respects in Billy Donovan. Because of his connections he's made all around the world when it comes to basketball, when he walks in the room along with Eversley and Karnišovas, now that means something, because it's not a first-year coach that you kind of know. It's not an international coach that you really don't know. It's Billy Donovan, and that makes a lot of difference.
Yeah, he is a guy who I feel like he didn't know Arturis, he didn't know Eversley, but he went into the process with an open mind. And what I love, and you and I talked about this, I don't know, 2-3 weeks ago, mm-hmm. when he said, yeah, I just got home, I drove from Oklahoma City, hadn't seen my family. Phone rings, it's Arturis. Yeah, I need to come down there on Friday. Well, I literally just walked in. I haven't seen my family. I need to be there. Well, right away, if you hang up the phone and you're Billy Donovan, you're saying to your wife, yeah, I know I haven't seen you guys, except this guy's serious. I think there might be something here. And he shows up with Mark Eversley and bam, get it done.
Major market job, big shoes to fill. It is the most difficult job that he'll have. If we had more time, I would have asked him where does he rank this job versus others. I know he's not into the job just yet, but look at the stops he's made with this team. And it doesn't mean this team is not trash. This team is young. The Markkanens, the Wendell Carter Jr.'s, the Kobe Whites, the Zach Levines. There's so many questions about this roster, but it doesn't mean that Donovan can't mold and shape it the way he wants to. I just have a lot of confidence in him being able to develop young players, as you mentioned, which was a key question that you talked to Billy about, and that is point guard development. That should be his expertise. Could you imagine what Coby White could be with Billy Donovan in like 3 years from now? Hopefully that's a guy that also can score the ball but also make others better. Donovan can specialize in that as a motivator and as a coach.
Yep, and as I told him, I remember watching Billy play. This guy could score. He could shoot the basketball. But Billy Donovan was as cerebral a point guard who knew, all right, I got to get the ball to, who did he say, Otis Thorpe? I got to get the ball up the floor. I got to make sure that I get everyone else in right spots. And you are exactly correct in your analysis that he understands point guard play. And that's where we've struggled so mightily.
Think about it. He just got off of a job where he had one of the best of all time in Chris Paul. Many thought that like Chris Paul was washed, right? Like there's no way he has any more, you know, quality basketball left in his arsenal. And he showed that he can still lead a team. He still gets those tricky fouls. He can still get to the foul line. He can get to the basket. Here's a guy in the autumn of his career and Chris Paul working with Billy Donovan. And Oklahoma City did something that I did not expect. And first of all, be even in the bubble, let alone being in the playoffs. Donovan helped that process as a head coach with his strategy, with the players. So hats off to him. He's got a hell of a job here with Chicago. But I could see the turnaround. I could see the light. Didn't see it with Fred. Didn't see it with Boylan. But I definitely see it with Donovan.
All right. We will get to your calls, but we're going to take a timeout. 312-332-3776. He's Hoodie. I'm Cap.
Take that.
Take that.
This is Cap and Jay Hood. Enjoy the show each morning in your Instagrammies at Cap Jay Hood on Instagram.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
ESPN 1000.
Rolling on. Captain Jay Hood. Hoodie was none too pleased in the Hood Cave yesterday with the White Sox collapse and the four-game sweep in Cleveland.
That wasn't happening
with the Cubbies. We'll get into more of that, Hoodrow. But Darren Utenick is the executive director of Bernie's Book Bank. I am walking home. Darren's going to be with me on Tuesday. 29 miles we're going to walk from downtown all the way up to the northern suburbs at Ravinia is where it's going to end. And Darren is with us right now. Darren, good morning. You stretched out. You got some CBD ointment. You ready to go?
Good morning, gentlemen. I got everything going on right now. I'm getting loose.
Yeah, you got everything except the cab for my guy Cap. Now, you got to have contingency plans just in case. Will there be a car for a cab? I mean, just to kind of just be a pace car for Cap. If he needs to tap out, will there be a car available? Have you thought about that, Darren?
Listen, you know your man Cap. He's got the cryo going. He's got all kinds of things that he's been prepping for. If anybody's worried, it's me. It's honestly me. I'm hoping he can carry me a couple miles.
So we're trying to raise money for Bernie's Book Bank. You're the executive director. There's been a number of athletes that have been involved in it. I was there last year with Patrick Manley, Olin Krutz, Charles Tillman. There, I know Matt Nagy's wife has been there. Like, it's really, really an amazing group. So quickly tell people how they are, if for Bernie's Book Bank, how people can get involved and how they help.
Yeah, and, you know, thanks for that overview. We've been very fortunate. For 10 years, we've been serving the literacy crisis in Chicagoland and really providing quality free books to underserved children. We provide 12 books annually to children. And, you know, before the pandemic hit, we were serving about 300,000 children with about 3.3 million books. And since the pandemic hit, the crisis was before the pandemic. There was a literacy crisis in the country. But when the pandemic hit, you know, this got exacerbated because the children we serve were being disproportionately impacted because they had to go to alternative or remote learning. And the difficulties in that, getting that up to speed, one of the things that we can provide is books, and the teachers then can work with those children directly and work through gaining their literacy foundation. Because as one of our sayings is books for a better life, you, Jay Hood, everybody, Danny, we've all read our way to a better life, because without literacy, there is no foundation for the future.
No question. And Cap and I have talked about the educational disparities when it comes to just having Wi-Fi. You know, during this time, people assume because there's no in-classroom studies that you can just go home and have e-learning. 46% of West Englewood kids under 18 without internet access. One out of three homes don't have Wi-Fi access in Austin. How daunting, how amazing is that number where there's so many underserved kids from a book standpoint and an e-learning standpoint?
Yeah, it's a really valid point. And I think, you know, the other consideration here is even the children with Wi-Fi, a lot of them were entering a new world where, you know, Google Docs or Zoom might as well have been, you know, why don't you take me to the moon? You know, these were new applications that they'd never worked on. And so getting books into the hands of these children, though, the teachers were able to work directly with them on their curriculum and do independent reading and do report backs on what you read about and what you discovered in these books. And we really want to provide books that are mirrors and windows for the children that we serve so that they can not only see themselves in the books, but they can also see what a world of possibilities there is out there for them.
All right, again, I'll see you Tuesday. We're going to take off right after the show around 10 o'clock, and we'll have some snacks, we'll have some laughs, and you pick me up if I go down, I'll pick you up if you go down, and we're just going to keep cranking it up. People want to make a donation, they can go to berniesbookbank.org, or they can go to obviousshirts.com, and they can order a really cool shirt with all the proceeds going to the book bank.
Absolutely. Just before I go, I just want to say thank you. Obviously, everybody at ESPN knows what a great guy you are, but this was a great brainchild of yours, Cap. We're so thankful to be a partner with you in this endeavor, and I just want to say thank you to you, and I also want to say thank you to the 32 team members back at our facility who have cranked out 860,000 books since the pandemic started. So looking forward to Tuesday. We're going to do it, buddy.
We're going to do it. Make sure you have a change of clothes and shoes, and we'll get it done, kid. We may be crawling at the end, but we're going to get it done.
I agree. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you for all you do. There he is. That is Darren Utenick. He is the executive director of Bernie's Book Bank.
Now, hold on, Cap. Let me get this website right again. Give it to me again, Bernie's Book Bank. Give it to me again.
Berniesbookbank.org. You can make a donation right there. Or if you say, you know what, I'd like to get one of those cool T-shirts that the awesome people, Joe Johnson at Obvious Shirts, go to obviousshirts.com. You can click on it, buy the shirt, and all the proceeds, because Joe's amazing, go to Bernie's Book Bank.
I see. Obviousshirts.com and berniesbookbank.org. I've got it.
You got it. And you're going to. You promised me you're going to be at the finish line.
Of course I'm going to be there. I got to support my partners, no question about it. You just might need me for a shot of Crown just to get revived.
No question about it. No question. Danny's even going to leave the house at night, and he's going to be there. Maybe J.R. Meller, we'll see. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm excited for the challenge. It's going to be a long way to walk, but you know what? I'm up for a challenge if it's going to help a whole bunch. Jeff Dickerson on the Bears and the Falcons. Next.
Take that.
Take that.